This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Shug McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, and as I tell you every week, this is the show that trainers listen to. As always, very happy to have you joining me for the next hour, listening to the show throughout North America, Sirius 219, XM 201, or tuned in to the free live streaming or the archived podcast, and you're doing that, of course, on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, Bob Baffert, the Hall of Famer, native of Nogales, Arizona, first joined me on our Trainer Talk show back 5 years ago, October 29th, 2014. Now, of course, he's been on with me many, many times since that date, but that was the last time he appeared on this particular show. We sat down together at Santa Anita's Clocker's Corner just before Breeders' Cup that year, and I remember that we visited for a full hour on that show, never discussed any of his Kentucky Derby winners. As a matter of fact, we barely touched on any of his top horses. And as you know, there have been plenty of those over the years. It was all about the early years of Bob's life and his career, and it was a fascinating visit. At that time, Bob had saddled 2,504 winners, which included three Derby winners. Today, that total stands at 3,051 career victories, five Kentucky Derby winners, two Triple Crowns under his belt, 15 Breeders' Cup winners, and a multitude of major stakes victories to his credit. Bob, I got to tell you, man, not bad for a kid who grew up on a cattle ranch in Nogales raising chickens and selling eggs to the locals.
It's been quite a journey, and I never imagine it ever. It was never a dream. It just sort of fell in place. But I just fell in love with horses at a young age because my father loved horses, and that's why I got involved with it because of him. And so he was busy raising seven children, so I was lucky enough to just keep going with it.
Yeah, luckily for us and for the sport of thoroughbred racing, your dad, Bill, loved horses and was a quarter horse guy, had a couple of quarter horse mares. Didn't you tell me that the name of the first horse that your dad had there was Baffert's Heller? Is that right?
Yeah, his actually the first horse that he bred, his name was Baffert's Ballot, B-A-L-L-O-T, and he sent him to a trainer in Laredo, Texas. I remember the horse won a race. There was a win picture from Laredo. And the second horse was Baffert's Ballot. He raised them there. There was a farm in Patagonia, which is like 20 minutes from Nogales. And they stood a horse there called Parker's Trouble. He was an old quarter horse. I think he's in the Hall of Fame for the beautiful horse. And he bred his mares to him, and he got his race horses. And Baffert's Heller, I think he won a couple races. They're at Sonoyta, Arizona, and maybe Rialto. And then we made a saddle horse out of them. And that's the horse that I learned how to ride on. And so he was tough. He was a quirky horse. And every time I got on him, I was like, I want to say I was about 12, 13 years old. And he would try to buck me off. He knew that when I was on him, I was sort of scared of him. And it took me about 6 months until I finally was able to handle him, but I learned so much from that horse. He was a beautiful horse, and I'll never forget that horse. That's how I learned everything about him, and I remember letting him, when I was galloping around, I let him run one time, and wow, they're so fast. Quarter horses are extremely fast, and so it was quite an experience.
Yeah, it's amazing that, you know, here you are, you grow up around quarter horses, you make a living training quarter horses, you make the segue to thoroughbreds, and all of a sudden you're training horses to go a mile and a quarter, mile and a half in the Belmont Stakes, and having success at that level too. How much different is it, Bob, training a horse to sprint, a quarter horse, and then transitioning over to training horses like this to go the marathon distances, if you will?
It was actually, it didn't happen overnight. It took me about a year to sort of figure it out. Quarter horses, you know, once you get them fit, you get them running, you don't have to train them as much. They don't go to the track every day. I would gallop them like once every other day. Maybe they'd go like one turn or, 1 mile, like 5/8 of a mile galloping them. And we'd breeze them probably about every 2 weeks or something like that. And once you get them running those trials, you run the trials and finals, which are a week apart. You don't do much in between, but they have to be really sound and healthy because the quarter horses, the whole key is the break. And if they don't break, then forget it. You're gonna get nothing. And so they have to be really. There's a fine line there where they have to be really sharp, that they have to break well, and there's a lot of gait schooling involved, and, you make sure they stand up in there. And that's why I've been a real, with the thoroughbreds, I'm really funny. Funny about the gait. I do a lot of gait schooling. I want to make sure my horses behave themselves, and they don't behave themselves in there. It really bothers me, but you want them to break, and the start's so important.
Visiting with Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Bob, when we did sit down at Santa Anita 5 years ago, you hadn't won a Triple Crown. You've now done that twice. And I mentioned the other Breeders' Cup victories to your credit now. But there have been other moments. Horses like Arrowgate come to mind and his spectacular run that he had. You were around Game Winner and his special run. There were so many good horses that you've been part of. McKenzie recently. When you describe what these past 5 years have been like for you, and you talk to people that you're close with, how do you do it?
Well, I mean, I don't think about it too much. I just, every day is a different day, and I don't really look back on anything. I just keep going like it's a new day every day, and so that's how I deal with it. And I don't think about the winners as much as I think about the ones that got away, and what could I have done differently? Like when I have a good horse and he gets beat in a big race, I always beat myself up. What could I have done differently to make that? Why didn't he run his race? And that's the thing I think about.
What big race would you like to have back if you could do it over again?
I would love to have had the Point Given race back in the Derby. That one sort of got away from us. Like to have that one back. There's a lot of
but, Cavenier.
Looking at Lucky, that race, the one hole just got us there, and so a lot of them got away because just bad racing luck, but I think the Point Given race really, that's the one that really, I thought I was so disappointed because I knew he had Triple Crown written all over him. I just needed to get the first one. We were overconfident. That's when we used to pick our own spots, our own post positions. And I remember they didn't shuffle the cards and they were pulling them out. And I was the last one they pulled out. I think it was for TV or something, but I remember they were right in order. They were coming right in order, like they cut them in half. It just, and so he was the last one drawn, and it was between second to last. It was between the 2 and the 17 hole. And I was sitting there with Gary Stevens and Prince Ahmed, and I wanted the 2. The Prince wanted the 2. And Gary insisted on the 17 because he wanted to ride him like Thunder Gulch. He was going to stay on the outside. So we took the 17. And I remember we went to get interviewed afterwards. And the first question, I'll never forget, Jenny Reese, asked me, he says, Bob, you picked the 17. Does it bother you that there's never been a winner come out of post 17? And I remember answering her, I wish I would have known that before I picked 17. and there's still never been a winner out of 17. And it's things like that that, you know, I said, man, I knew I should have stuck with two. But, you know, it was a weird race. It was, the track was really fast that year. They were breaking track records. I remember I broke the track record with a Lowndes filly going 6.5. The track was extremely fast. So, you know, the jockey started riding the track, sending everything hard, and that's what happened. We had Congaree in there. You had Song and a Prayer. He just smoked away from there with Congaree, and Gary wanted to sort of stay close to him. And I'll never forget, we came back, and Point Given was just completely done at the 3/8 pole, and I just couldn't understand it. And later on, you know, Gary, that's one thing about Gary Stevens. He said, that's what made him so great. He said, Boss, I think I figured him out. I think he wants you to let him fall away from there and then pick it up. I think that's the way he runs. He just got caught up chasing. And after that, then he won the next one. And then when he won the Belmont, it was just like, I was sick. I go, this is the one, you know, and maybe I'll never win the Triple Crown. But, you know, I've been fortunate to have all these good horses, and I'm, you know, and there's been other horses probably could have won the Derby that, you know, didn't have good racing luck. Just like Elliot Walden, you know, he kept running second to me in the Derby, and then he beats me in the Triple Crown. So, you know, things happen for a reason. I've always thought that, so I never look back.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, that's one you'd like to have back, and I'm sure that there are others. It's easier to remember the ones that don't win than the ones that do. But, look, you don't get into the Hall of Fame and train more than 3,000 winners without doing things that are extraordinary in a lot of respects. So if you think about, like, golfers will talk about the best shot they ever hit, and Major League Baseball players, the best swing they ever put on a ball that left the ballpark, whatever it might be. What's the best training job that Bob Baffert's ever done with any horse?
The best training job? That's a tough one. I mean, there's been so many of them that I really felt that I made a difference. I don't know. It's hard to say. I would say, like, I remember, like, anytime you go to when you go across the pond, you know, when you go to Dubai, those are tough. Those are, it's really to take Silver Charm over there, and to first time to Dubai and go through that, because you have no idea what you're up against. And I think all those Dubai wins were pretty, you know, they're really, you just, they're tough, you know, and especially to take a good horse. But, you know, horses like War Emblem, I remember when I got him, he was just a rogue. He was tough. And we had to make a lot of adjustments. And I made a certain rig for his, I made a little lip cord for him that had stretched. And I had a different rider, and we just did something different with him there. And I think, you know, it made a big difference with him there. A little light horse. He only weighed, like, I remember when we bought him, he weighed like 990 pounds, and
wow.
And we put the weight on him within 3 weeks. He was up to 1,070. You know, he pulled it up, put it on without, you know, and still trained and without losing weight. But I mean, a lot of horses, they're it's my best jobs. I think I was in the quarter horse business. You know, when I was training quarter horses, I'd bring these horses up to these big races. I like coming off a layoff. I think American Pharoah trained him after he got beat in the Travers. You know, trained him up to the Breeders' Cup. You know, really, that was because he was coming off a beat like that, and I almost didn't run him in the Breeders' Cup. He had to have been doing really well to run him, because they were thinking of retiring him after he got beat at the Travers. And there's another one. I forgot about that. I would love to have that one back. The American Pharoah. He should have never gotten beat in the Travers, but we got caught up in it. I wasn't going to run. So I just didn't really prepare for it. And when I got there, we were just a little bit overwhelmed with everything that went on. And I galloped them the day before. You know, we changed everything up. And he basically went way too fast the day before. It was through it. I've never been so overwhelmed in my life. When I took him up there to gallop him, when there was like 15,000-20,000 people in the grandstand, it was crazy. But it was really cool. But it was, you know, that I think that day it was. I mean, we'd be ready for it now, you know. But it was tough.
You know, I talked to your fellow Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen last week, and Steve's won more races than anybody but Dale Baird. He's been incredible, and. I asked him about winning the Kentucky Derby because that's one that's just he hasn't been able to get over the hump, and he's had seconds and thirds and some really good horses and just can't get past it. And I said, why is that race so difficult to add to your resume? And he said, well, it's the premier race in the world, and it's so difficult to try to win this thing, but you've done it five times. How come you've had so much success in the Derby? What's allowed you to do it, do you think?
I mean, I think Steve, he's going to get it done. I mean, he's going to do it. I think it's because I've always had the best horse, maybe. And that's why if you have the best horse, you usually win it. And I've been fortunate to have the best horse. And I brought him up to it. You know, from when I was training quarter horses, we would and that's why Wayne Lucas was successful. You learn to bring these horses up. We've had these trials. And you'd be like, you know, the 10 fastest, and they'd have 500 horses were looking for those 10 spots. So you bring them along. You want them to run well in the trials, but not really enough to fast enough to qualify, and then bring them back a week later. So you learn how to sort of bring them up, like those prep races, how you can do so much with them, and then have them run their best race. But I think a lot of it. It just happens. It's nothing, you know, you get the right horse, everything's got to go right. This year it looked really good in the spring, and then just everything just, you know, those horses got hurt, Nadal and Charlatan. They looked so strong. I would have had Charlatan, Nadal, Thousand Words, and Authentic. I was coming in really loaded, like never so loaded, you know, but I say loaded for me, but when I came in with Justify and Dortmund and American Pharoah, I mean, those were, you know, I knew I had, like, superior horses there.
So let's talk about the two that you're going to saddle on Saturday, Thousand Words and Authentic. In what ways do they give you the confidence that they are Derby-type horses?
Well, I think there are two different types of horses. I think Thousand Words is the horse, we would call him the other Baffert, the other one that you never know, might jump up and win. He's been steady. He had a lull there. He had a couple bad races, just got sour. But looks like he's doing really well. I think he'll get the mount a quarter. He has to have things go his way. He drew well. I like his post. Authentic is the quicker of the two. I don't like his post. I didn't want to be way out there. I wanted to be like near the middle somewhere. And so he's going to have to probably use himself a little bit early, you know, from that post. But they're both trained really well. But when you have a horse like Tis the Law in there that's just mature and just doing everything right, and, you know, it's, you know, you know that. You're within, you know, you look at, you're within a length or two of him. And so you've got to make that up somewhere in the race. And you need racing luck. And everything's got to go well this week. And, you know, one bad break and you're out of it. One stumble, bump, whatever. If they go to the gate, if they get hot, if they don't handle the paddock. And the thing this year is, you know, both of my horses, like a horse like Thousand Words, you know, they don't like crowds, and so there's no crowds there, so that's going to be it's going to benefit a lot of horses without the big crowds there, because that's half the battle is them handling the crowds. And I remember American Pharoah, he had trouble with the crowds, and after that he was fine, but he almost got beat in the Derby.
Yeah, you know, you talk about the lack of crowds, and there will be no fans at the Derby this year. It's also going to be kind of a surreal walkover from the barn to the paddock, and that's one of the great walks in all the sports. I always say, Bob, it's like, I can imagine it's like walking up the 18th fairway at Augusta National on a Sunday after you've taken the lead and you're going to win the Masters. It's describe what that walk is typically like and how it might be completely different this year.
Well, I think the walk used to be better until they changed it a few years back. They changed it to where they would, when they started gathering all the horses together and all the people together, and it was sort of, it's I didn't like the walk. You know, it's too many people, and I liked it when the horses went up to the paddock and you would walk with your group, and then after that, they changed it. It hasn't been the same. I like it when the old days you used to be able to walk, but it's fun if you've done it for the first time. I remember the first time I did it, I walked with Unbridled Song and Cavaneer. We were in the same barn. We walked up together. I remember I had my brothers with me, and we were walking up there, and it was really, I felt like I was walking to the OK Corral. You know, it was, you felt that there was just a few of us there. And I remember walking up with Silver Charm, with Bob Lewis, and he was so excited, and we're walking up there. And I remember it was cold. It was like, it was pretty chilly that day. And Silver Charm, he was just walking up there like, Pulpit was way ahead of us, and he was all prancing, jumping up and down. He was all lathered up, and I mean, it was like you could tell, you know, he was, you know, that's not the way you want to see your horse go to the paddock. And it was amazing. Silver Charm, he just was cool, calm, collected, walked in there just like just a pro, you know. And so it was a great feeling. But with Cavaneer, you know, I always said that I always thought that was the worst loss I ever had, because I never thought I would ever get back to the Derby. I thought maybe that was my chance. I missed it, you know, got beat just a dirty beat right on the wire like that. And I thought I'd won it. And it took me a year to get over until I won it. And then I was fortunate to win it with Silver Charm, you know. So, but, those, when you get beat like that, I'd rather get beat a length or, you know, two lengths, you know, get beat up, especially when you have it and it's just taken away from you right at the end.
Visiting with Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Bob, you said you don't typically like to look back, you like to look ahead, so let's do that. You're one behind Ben Jones for all-time Derby wins. You have five, he has six. A win Saturday, and you equal that mark. You're a competitive guy, obviously, or you wouldn't be in the position you're in. How badly do you want to see your name equaling Ben Jones at the top of that list?
Well, it's something that I really don't think about. I hear it all the time, you know.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's like a jinx, you know. Like that's why I hate when they say that a jockey is one win away from a milestone, and it takes them like 30 days to get it, you know, instead of they would have gotten it if they hadn't been thinking about it. So, it's something to be – I'm proud of all my wins, but I like to win these races for the clients. I want them – I wish every client that I train for could feel what it is to win the Kentucky Derby, to watch your horse, you know, be in front at the 8th pole, 16th pole, and they hit the wire – and they win, and to feel that, you know, it's to feel the glory of it all, you know, and that's the best feeling in the world, you know. When you look at that, you just look at a stat or whatever, but just to get that feeling, it's the greatest feeling in the world, and in horse racing to watch your horse hit the wire in front.
Only about 3 minutes left before we have to wrap it up and get to the commercial break, Bob. And I typically like to end by asking trainers to let us know something that people might not know about them, but I'm going to do it differently here. I'm going to ask you a question. I want to know what it's like being Bob Baffert. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. Celebrities, athletes, in the world of thoroughbred racing, you're a rock star. You can go anywhere. People are going to know who you are. But I'm curious, if you go out to stores or restaurants or you're walking through the airport and there's people there, do people outside of racing recognize Bob Baffert?
Sometimes. You know, when I'm in California, not really, but I'm in Kentucky, it's, you know, wherever I go, they recognize me. And I remember during the Faro and the Triple Crown, I'd be the go through an airport and people would say, "Aren't you the horse guy?" And I've had a lot of people, you know, tell me that, and they'll look at me like, "You look familiar." I get a lot of that, you know. I back in the day, I remember some kid asked me if I was Ric Flair. That's been the biggest thing. But you know, but in Kentucky, that's the only time I'm probably a semi-celebrity. But it's people that, you know, that it makes me feel good, because that means people are paying attention to horse racing, and that's so important that we have these kind of fans. And they're, you know, and especially American Pharoah, a lot of people watched him, and I get a lot of compliments. You know, I don't know you, but that horse made me feel so good that day watching him run. So people, they love, like any sport, you love to watch the superstars perform.
Well, and we love watching you and your horses perform, Bob. And you're always, as I tell you every time, extremely gracious every time I reach out and ask you to join me for a few minutes. And I know you have a busy week, and I can't thank you enough for taking some time out of your schedule here today. All the best on Saturday, and all the best moving forward. And stay safe
quiet.
And healthy.
It's not too busy. It's very quiet.
Yeah, it's surreal.
Great. I'm telling you. Well, I was back there today, and it was like you would have thought it was you know, there's nothing going on, you know. It's weird.
Well, enjoy it, and good luck on Saturday, and let's go get number six.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bob Baffert here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Yeah, he has just been so wonderful, and I've told the story many, many times about back 5 years ago, as I mentioned, waiting outside of his barn to ask him to come on this Trainer Talk show. I didn't know Bob at that point at all. I'd always been a bit intimidated to walk up and talk to him, and I did. I waited for a good 30 minutes outside of his barn because he was on the phone. I walked in. I finally said, "I'm not waiting anymore." I walked into his barn at Santa Anita. He was kicked back. His legs were up on his desk. His feet were up on his desk, and he was on the phone. And he looked at me, put the phone down. He was just texting. He put the phone down, and he said, "Hey, I love your show. I listen to Trainer Talk all the time." And it just went from there, and he's been just wonderful ever since. So all the best to Bob coming up on Saturday, and to all the contenders in this year's Derby 146. Of course, we'll have that exclusive coverage. Head over to horseracingradio.net to check out the podcast of this show and to check out our complete Derby Week schedule. For my producer, Lee Delapina, for my special guest, Bob Baffert, I am Mike Pennell. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.
From America's number one auction company by percentage of Grade 1 winners sold, including these selected yearling graduates: Bast, Four-Wheel Drive, Honor AP, Perfect Alibi, Rushing Fall, Sharing, Speech, and Tis the Law, comes an unprecedented showcase of quality. 662 selected yearlings in one extraordinary catalog. The Fasic Tipton Selected Yearling Showcase, September 9th and 10th, after the Derby in Lexington, Kentucky.
Live racing is back at Woodbine. Visit Woodbine.com to watch live feeds and check out their Stellar Stakes program, which includes $13.8 million in purses across 75 stakes. The Canadian Triple Crown begins with the 161st running of the Queen's Plate on Saturday, September 12th. The Grade 1 Rico Woodbine Mile, a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup, is set for Saturday, September 19th. Visit Woodbine.com for more information. Woodbine, a new breed of experience.